Hi, and welcome back to a new episode of Sassy Single Mums. Hi everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of Sassy Single Mums. My name is Winnie and I'm the founder and host of the Sassy Single Mums podcast. I built this show with one goal, and that is just to share the authentic stories of single mothers who are challenging the status quo and tackling parenting with sass. In the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about the stigma attached to being a single mother. And on today's show, we're taking a slightly different turn. So we're speaking to sassy mum Rachel, who decided to become a single mum by choice. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, a single mum by choice is a woman who decides to have a baby via the forms of IVF, so without a partner. And we're going to learn a little bit more about Rachel's journey and why she decided to go ahead and have her daughter without having met someone first. So here she is. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm really excited because this is the first episode that we're doing with a single mum by choice. So I'm really keen to learn more about your experience.
I'm excited to kind of share it with you and go through it all with you.
Cool. So as a starting point, I guess, when did you decide that you wanted to be a single mum by choice?
I'd always kind of said, like to my mum and to my sister, that if I was on my own when I got to the age of 40, that I'd have a child on my own. But then when I was 26 and I had kind of a few failed relationships, been cheated on and things like that, I just thought, do you know what, why wait until I'm 40 to kind of see what happens? I knew that I wanted to be a mum and I wanted to have children. So, yeah, at the age of 26, that's when I decided to kind of start looking into it and got quite serious about doing it, really.
Okay. And what was, I guess, your mum's response at 26 when you decided that you wanted to go ahead and become a single mum by choice? What was her reaction?
She was really supportive. They had a friend that had done a similar thing, but she was older when she did it. You know, she knew that I would be okay. I'm quite a strong, independent person anyway. So, you know, she didn't try and talk me out of it. She was very much, you know, if that's what you want to do, I will help you as much as I can and be there for you as much as I can.
I guess in your mind, what were you going through? So prior to, because I don't know, if you're anything like me, I always go through a thought process where it's like, I decide I want to do something and then I like overthink it and then I decide whether I really want to do it or not. So
I'm a bit of the opposite. So I was kind of like, you know, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm gonna do, and pretty much kind of immediately started looking into it. And you know, I kind of knew what the ins and outs would be, but not so much the process of doing it. So I just kind of literally dived straight in, phoned a local fertility clinic to book an appointment with them and try and find out what the process was with them to do it.
And what did they tell you? So the first thing that you did after deciding that this was definitely something that you wanted to do, you called the female fertility clinic. Was that a straightforward process? Did you have to pay for it?
Yeah, so they was like, well, what we do kind of first steps is book you in for an initial consultation. We'll do some blood tests, we'll do some scans, check that you've not got any fertility issues, because obviously I didn't know whether I had or not. I've never tried to have a baby naturally. So they booked it in.
Sorry, I was just going to say that's a really big topic because it is one of those things where some women, they don't necessarily, you know, I guess most women, they don't necessarily get tested on their fertility until sometimes never ready to have a baby, and they kind of assume or they hope that they would just be able to have a baby when the time's right, or at least when,
you know. And I was very much one of those people, I think. I just thought, oh yeah, actually, you know, how do I know that it's actually possible and, you know, I'll be able to get pregnant easily? So that was kind of the first steps that they did. They do like an internal scan, check your ovaries and make sure everything looks okay there. That was the first appointment that I had with them, really.
Yeah.
And then what happened next?
So after that, it's kind of another consultation where you see one of the doctors there, and they kind of go through your options with you. So obviously I knew that I needed a sperm donor to help me, but I originally thought I would go down the IUI route, which is insemination, basically, or turkey basting, as some people would refer to it. But after having that consultation and learning that, well, actually, that can take on average 3 to 6 goes, because it is like trying to conceive naturally. You know, you're guessing when there or thereabouts is the right time. You don't know if it's definitely going to work. That's when I made the decision to go down the IVF route. So whilst the initial cost was a lot more, there was a lot higher chance of it working first time round, with me not having any fertility issues. Whereas if I would have gone for the IUI, if, for example, you know, it would have taken 6 goes, it would have cost a lot more money, and money I didn't have really.
Before going through the IVF, you had to, suppose, decide who the sperm donor was going to be and kind of have a think about that. So what was that experience like? And what information did you need to kind of find out before deciding?
It's really strange, really, because, I mean, different clinics use different sperm banks. So this one used the European Sperm Bank, and you literally just log on. And wow. I always describe it as like a dating site, but without the pictures and the awful chat up lines. So, you know, there's all these profiles of men there, and, you know, you select your characteristics, that, you know, what hair color, eye color, and then all the profiles are there, and you can read through and see, you know, what nationality people are. It gives you information on their background, medical information, you know, height, weight, family history, just that kind of information, really. And you just select a donor that you want to proceed with from that information.
And how did you decide which donor to go for? And, you know, how many people were listed?
There's so many on there. And I read through a couple, and then I got to one and I was just drawn to it. I just liked the sound of them. They were quite similar to me. They were similar build to me, similar height. A guy from Sweden. And I think because I was interested in that person, I liked the sound of them, I made the decision not to carry on going through them all, because I thought, otherwise, you know, I'm going to be here for weeks reading through all these profiles. So I just thought, you know, I like the sound of this guy.
How long did it take you to find his profile?
It was probably the third or fourth one that I went through. So, I didn't go through a lot. But for me, it just felt right. And he's the guy that I chose.
That's amazing, Rachel. And you know what? I love the decisiveness. I love the fact that you would... I'm going to do this. And, you know, you went on there and you're like, yeah, this is the one. Like, I think it's so inspiring, for real. So I guess, from what does it mean from a sperm donor's perspective, you know, because he's obviously put down his information on this website. Does he have any, I don't know, like, responsibility? Does he have any oversee? Like, what, you know, what is the limit?
Don't have any parental responsibilities at all. He's an anonymous donor. However, the law is so that when Evelyn gets to 18, she can find out who that donor is if she wishes. But he doesn't know who I am. He doesn't get my information. He doesn't know anything on Evelyn. All he will have got told and told was that there was a successful pregnancy. From using his sperm.
Okay, but that's good, because at least it notifies him. But it does make me wonder, are there like, perhaps, do you think there's men out there who are like trying to find out, or do you think this is just like, this is
I think more? Different countries seem to have different rules, and you know, you can use known donors, or some people will use somebody that they're a friend with for, you know, for a sperm donor. But I suspect there probably are people out there that try and find out. And I think there's also people that are donor babies that are also, you know, that they look into kind of any siblings that they may potentially have from the same donor as well.
Yeah, I can imagine, because for me, I have four siblings, and yeah, I guess even though, you know, there's, I think two of us have different dads, it's still really, you know, I still appreciate the fact that they are my siblings, and yeah, you know, being able to know who they are and so on.
Yeah, and I think some people kind of think that way, you know, if they were conceived of a sperm donor, whereas I'm very much, you know, some people will say, refer to him as Evelyn's dad, and I'm like, he's not her dad, you know, he's a sperm donor. And it's the same that when I did the process, I egg shared, so donated half of my eggs to somebody who needed them to have a baby. And the same, you know, I don't see, they were successful, they've had a child, but I don't see that that's my child. You know, it's, yes, there's the DNA there, yes, it was from my eggs, but you know, that they're not mine. So I think it just depends kind of how you look at it.
Yeah, can we talk about for a minute? Because yeah, it's not that I agree or disagree, it's just that I would really love to hear more about, I guess, the theory around it, and how, you know, how you think about it. And
yeah, I think sometimes I'm probably a bit too laid back. So, you know, there are some people that would kind of think, yes, they, you know, they've got all the kids out there, or, you know, step siblings. And but to me, it's just, you know, I just donated my eggs to help somebody. And, yeah, you know, I'm glad that I could help. The couple in question actually recently got back in touch with the fertility clinic to see if I would donate my eggs to them again, so that they could have another baby and provide, wow, a sibling. I've said yes, so that's all kind of going off at the minute, really. I'm about to start the drugs for that next week, actually. But yeah, to me, it's just, you know, I'm just helping somebody. I think because I used a donor to help me, I'm probably have a slightly different view on it than what somebody might do if they've not done it before, or it's their first time doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's absolutely incredible. Like, that's so beautiful to be able to help somebody else. So you've found a sperm donor. Yeah. What happened next?
So the fertility clinic order it online. So it gets shipped to the fertility clinic. That probably happened, I think it was December 2016. Okay. And then because I was egg sharing, I had to wait to be matched up with somebody to be the recipient of my eggs. And that took until, I think it was around March 2018. So there was a bit of a wait there before kind of things got moving again. But once they'd been matched up, it was pretty much, you know, get your, when your cycle's done the rounds again, then they're kind of ready to go, and you start the drugs that they give you and go from there.
Okay. So I just want to unpick that a little bit and just ask you just around that time period. So in 2016, obviously you'd found the sperm donor and you were doing the egg sharing process. And then it wasn't 2018 that you'd found a match in order for you to start.
2017, sorry.
Okay. Yeah. No worries. In that time frame, what was it like? You know, what were you going for at that time? Did you have any doubts? Were you still pretty keen? How engaged were you still with the whole process?
Really keen, and I just wanted to get moving. I hated the wait, which I don't know why, because it's like, you know, I knew it was happening at some point, and it was just constantly waiting for that phone call to say, we've found a recipient for your eggs, we can get moving. But you know, it went fairly quickly. You know, there's Christmas keeps you occupied and New Year and everything. And yeah, I never doubted it for one second. It was just more, you know, I want to get going.
Okay, no, absolutely, I understand. And then so then you went into the second part of the cycle, which was when they found a match. And then how long was the time period before, you know, you had the embryo and then you were, you know, pregnant and then you started bumping and so on?
I think it was May time when I started the IVF drugs that they give you. So you start off with one injection that you have to do every evening yourself. You do those for a couple of weeks. As time gets closer, you're then into the clinic kind of every 2 to 3 days for a scan, check your ovaries, check your follicles, check your egg count. So that's when it kind of gets pretty full on. And then a second injection's introduced that you have to do daily as well. And then literally they'll say, you know, you're going for a scan one day and they'll ring you that night and say, right, it's time to take your trigger injection. You'll be in the next kind of 2 days to have your eggs collected.
And were you working? How were you managing the kind of, you know, sporadic appointments and so on?
I'm quite fortunate that who I work for them self-employed. They're very, very flexible. You know, I can work from home. I can work from the office. If, you know, if I'm out on an appointment that's a personal appointment, I don't have to explain to them where I am. So that, you know, they've always been very accommodating, and a few of my colleagues knew what I was doing as well. So, you know, it never caused any issues.
And what were those conversations like? Because obviously you spoke with your family and you had their support throughout this whole, you know, you've had their support. Did you was it as straightforward speaking to people at work, society? I don't know. Did any of those things kind of cross your mind at the time?
I mean, no one's opinion ever kind of put me off or made me think about things, because I'm very much, I don't care about people's opinions if they, you know, if they're not nice or, you know, they're not negative, you know, if they're negative. Most people were okay. There was, you know, some people were a bit like, what are you doing? You're crazy. you know, it's really hard being a parent, and how do you know that you're going to manage? But, you know, I just think nobody knows they're going to manage, whether they've a single person or if they've got an army behind them. So, in, you know, until your baby is here, you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know how you're going to cope. But those things didn't faze me, and it certainly never put a spanner in the works to kind of stop me in my tracks and think, you know, what am I doing?
Yeah, you just get on with it. And to be honest, I had my son when I was 15, and although I was young, and I look at 15-year-olds now and I think, hell no, you should not be having a baby. Honestly, you should not be having a baby at 15. But if it does happen, you do just get on with it, you know, and you learn along the journey, because having a child doesn't come with a manual. It's about the experience. It's about making the experience your own.
Exactly.
Because it's so unique, and there's no, you know, there's no rule book. You just kind of have to go with the flow. And I think that's what's so beautiful about being a parent, not just being a mum, because there is that essence of love that comes with it. And you just, you just kind of push through. So I do feel that it's definitely genuine. But okay, so going back to hearing more about the journey before you had Evelyn. Yeah. So, you know, so it was 2017, 2018, you'd now found the match and you were on the kind of, you know, you were on the medication, taking the injections every so often. How long were you on that for, and what happened in the months to follow?
I think it was around 3 to 4 weeks that I was on the injections, and then early June 2017, I had the egg collection done. You have to have 8 eggs to be able to egg share. And they say to you before, you know, if there's any less than 8, you've got 2 options. You give them all to your recipient, and you wait, and then we'll do it again, or you keep them all. So I said, you know, give them all to that person. It's fine. I can wait another couple of months. It's, you know, it's not an issue. But luckily there was bang on 8 eggs collected. So we got 4 each. And then obviously it's literally the same day they're collected, they're mixed with the sperm. 2 out of my 4 fertilized okay and turned into embryos. The other two didn't. And I think it was literally 5 or 6 days later, I had one of the embryos put back, which is a really, really quick procedure. You know, you can literally watch it being done. It's strange because obviously, you know, you can't see the embryo, and there's literally just like this flicker of light almost as they implant it into your womb, and then you've got a 2-week wait before you do a pregnancy test.
Wow, that sounds incredible. So, all right, so we're just going to retract a little bit. So you had the four eggs, so you've got the four eggs, and then afterwards, so the eggs were fertilized, and then you had the embryo, and that was inserted. You know, so that was done really quick. Did you have to wait? Was it done on the same day? What was that process like?
When the eggs were collected, I think it was kind of like 5 days later I had the embryo put back. I literally cannot remember exactly, like, looking back, because it was just, it's almost like a bit of a blur. You know, they give you daily updates to let you know how your eggs are doing, if they've fertilized, if they're turning into embryos. So all that was, you know, quite nerve-wracking, because there was no guarantee that anything was going to fertilize, that anything was going to turn into an embryo that was going to be okay to put back, or, you know, that any of this was going to work.
So you only did it the one time then. So you did it the one time and you were successful, or it went really well.
Yeah. So I was just very lucky that the one time it worked perfectly fine. And obviously it resulted in me having Everly.
Fantastic. And then you were pregnant. So 9 months of pregnancy. What was that like? Did you throw up? Was it quite straightforward? How did you find the whole experience?
One of those really annoying people that had a really good pregnancy. Okay. I never had any morning sickness. I think it was weird because obviously I found out from 2 weeks that I was pregnant, which is obviously very early to find out from. And they did a scan at 6 weeks at the clinic, like a viability scan to make sure that I was still pregnant. I never had any sickness. I mean, I struggled with tiredness in the beginning. I'd come home from work in the afternoon for an afternoon nap. but aside from that, I was okay.
That's great. And then you had baby Evelyn.
Yeah, so she was born in March 2018.
Oh, wow. So she's coming up. So she would have just turned 2 this year, is that
right? Yeah, earlier this year, yeah.
Oh, wow. So she's still toddlers. How are you finding that?
She's all right, actually, at the moment. I think earlier on in the year, we probably had terrible 2s a bit earlier than the age of 2. But yeah, I think because we've spent so much time together as of late with, you know, the lockdown and everything, it's been okay.
What is she like? How would you describe her personality?
Sassy, for definite. Don't know where she gets it from. But she's also, you know, she's very caring. She's very loving. But then she's very funny, and, you know, she loves being in fancy dress, and she loves singing and loves dancing. She has zero fear. You know, she just seems to have no fear with things, which is good, but then also gives me panic attacks sometimes. You know, when we're out and about, it's like, a very determined little girl.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but she's going to be great. And I think, I don't know, I guess there are proverbs out there, at least African proverbs out there, that have said, you know, if a child wants to touch fire, let them touch it. And then once it burns, they'll know not to go back there, you know?
Exactly.
So how would you say life has been for you as a single mom by choice?
I think, again, because I'm, you know, I am quite a laid back person. You know, I'm not going to lie and say it's plain sailing, because it isn't. And I think especially juggling work, a house, you know, keeping on top of things at home and work and having a child and getting that balance right, it, you know, it isn't easy. but we've got a great relationship. I don't know if that's, you know, because it is just me and her, and, you know, we do a lot together when I'm not at work, and make sure that I kind of make up for the time that when I am at work, or if I've got to do work when she's around at home. And, you know, it's good. My friends understand that it's not always easy for me to get out because I've not got somebody else here at home. You know, I've not got a partner here that I can leave her with.
Sometimes even if you have the partner, it's still hard to go out.
Yeah, exactly.
And understand that, you know, sometimes on weekdays and some weekends, you just need to be at home.
Yeah. And also, you know, until you've got a child, I think, you know, you'll never understand what it's like, and especially if you're working. And, you know, sometimes you also just don't want to go out. You know, you've been at work and then you've got home and you've got a small child to deal with, or, you know, a child of any age, you then just, you know, just don't want to do anything. And, you know, a lot of evenings, because I am at home on my own, you know, she goes to bed. So it's like, you know, I'm getting in bed and just doing nothing and watching telly.
I know. And I think sometimes people don't understand that. But there are evenings where I just need to come back and make sure that the house is clean, Ty's in bed on time, I'm in the house, and we're just, you know, relaxing just at home.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, you know, we need, you know, some time to ourselves as well, don't we? So it's, you know, important that we get that. And I think sometimes, you know, if she's messing around at bedtime and she's, you know, it's taking two and a half hours, or she's not going to sleep till late, I think that's when then it kind of gets to me, because it's like, you know, I've not had my dinner yet, or I've not been able to do this yet, or this needs doing, or I just want to chill out. And you just, you know, you've not got anybody else there that, you know, can go and sort you some dinner, or take care of, you know, the washing, or whatever it might be. So it's, you know, that does have an impact. So it's nice that sometimes you can just get a bit of downtime on your own.
It's true. I enjoy it every time. I'm always excited for that downtime. One thing that I guess that would be good to ask Rachel is that, so from my perspective, me and my son's dad, we've been apart since my son was 1.5 years old. Mm-hmm. And I became pregnant, I guess, by accident, I suppose. It wasn't planned. And mm-hmm. I decided to keep my son. And then me and his dad broke up. And although we've been apart for all of these years, there are moments where I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm so glad he can like do that, or he can like do that, and so on and so on. Are there ever times where you feel like, you know, I wish, like, you know, there was a dad, or I wish there was a man, or I wish her father was around to help me with these things?
No. I think because, you know, I've got such a good relationship with my mum, and, you know, back in the early days especially, you know, she used to help me a lot with doing my washing, or doing my ironing, or, you know, come and do the cleaning. And I think maybe more for me, that sometimes I think there's been times in the past where, because I am sat at home on my own every evening, I've been more like, I wish I had somebody sat here with me. So not really from kind of a parenting perspective, or, you know, somebody to help out with her, because I think because we never have had a guy around, it would obviously be a big thing for me if there was somebody. I've never kind of thought, I wish that she did have a dad, or I wish, you know, that there was a guy here to help out with things, just maybe more selfishly, you know, for me.
Well, I get that. And I feel the absolute same way at times. Yeah, definitely. I get that. I think what might be a little bit different for me is that over time, as my son has gotten older, I have felt like, I wish there was that male figure. But obviously that can also come in a partner, which leads me to my next question around, I guess, dating. Have you dated since having Evelyn?
Literally in the past month. So I started talking to somebody pretty much coming up to a month ago now, and we have been on a couple of dates and seen each other a couple of times literally within the past couple of weeks. So it's all very new for me. It's the first time I've kind of, you know, given somebody a chance, I guess, since having Evelyn, because, you know, in the past I've gone on these dating sites with every intention, and then I just think, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I can do it. And, you know, yeah, it's not just me, there's Evelyn to think about, and how would it work? And, you know, I've not got time to be socializing all the time. I can't be asking mum to babysit all the time. But, you know, me and this guy have started talking, and I don't know, we just get on so, so well. And I really like him, he really likes me. So
yeah,
who knows?
How did you find me? This is great. I love love stories.
On good old Tinder. Tinder, which, and yeah, I absolutely hated it. And I was literally at the verge of deleting it. Then we matched, and, you know, he messaged me straight away. And yeah, I would say, you know, he knows what my situation is. He gets it that things are going to be very, very slow moving, because I've got to think about her. And, you know, he totally gets that, and he's really good about it all.
That's great. Do you know what? That's really beautiful. And that's fantastic, Rachel. Like, it is really nice to have a companion, to have someone for you, because I think as a mother, particularly as a single mother, you have to do so much. You have to, like, make sure that you're completely on your game. And sometimes it's hard to make sure that you're doing everything the best way that you can. But even if you're not doing it the best way that you can, you still have to do it. So it means a lot of the time you're just like busy, and you're like, you know, just doing a whole load of things. So it's really important, and it is nice to have someone who can act as a companion, especially if they make you feel good and it's healthy, and, you know, you feel like they generally have your best interest at heart. So do you ever think about having more children? Like, have you thought about it?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have another one on my own, not because there's any regrets or anything like that, but more because at the minute it works. It just works, the kind of balance of childcare available, work, financially. I certainly wouldn't be able to pay, you know, the costs of IVF and buying sperm and all of that again. However, I would be open to having another one with somebody in the future.
And how much did you spend? Like, you don't have to completely disclose, but how much would you think?
So in total, it cost £9,000. And, you know, when I first set out to do it, I didn't have £9,000. I never envisaged that it would cost that much money. Yeah. You know, even just buying sperm costs £2,000, which, you know, it sounds mad, really. But I think worked hard and saved the money from working, really, and borrowed a little bit from the bank just to kind of top up the difference that I needed.
Yeah. And did you ever think to, because, you know, I have read that obviously you could always use a friend or somebody that you know as a sperm donor. Did that ever pass your mind?
For me, it just wasn't something that I wanted to do, because then I just thought it's completely different then. You know, you know who they are. What if they then, you know, at the time they might say, yeah, that's fine, I'll help you, don't want anything to do with a child. But how do you know that then they're not going to change their mind and want to be involved? And you know, what can you do if they wanted to be? You wouldn't be able to stop them, I guess, if they really wanted to. I'm sure there's things that they could do, you know, to be able to see the child. So for me, it was never an option. It was always go down the route of it's anonymous. Nobody, you know, I don't know who they are. There's not all those potentials kind of what ifs. Lurking. I mean, yes, it would have been a lot cheaper and a lot easier. But yeah, it wasn't an option for me.
Fair enough. And I completely understand why you decided to go the way, you know, the route that you decided to go. And I think if I was in a position where I wanted to be a single mom by choice, I would also want it to be as independent as independent as possible, so that it isn't intertwined into other areas of my life, I suppose.
Yeah.
Cool. But future kids, you're thinking of potentially having it with, you know, the partner. Maybe it's this guy that you're seeing at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I was to have another one, I'd rather have one and not have a huge age gap. So I think if, you know, maybe Evelyn got to kind of the age of 6 or 7 and I'd not had another one, then I probably wouldn't bother so much. I feel lucky that I've got Evelyn. So I'm not, if I don't have any more, it's fine. I'm lucky I've got her. But if, you know, this situation happens where I do meet somebody and settle down and could have another one and, you know, that it all felt right, then yes, that, you know, that's something I'd definitely be open to.
What advice would you give for other women out there who perhaps are also thinking about having children, but they haven't met the right guy? Then, you know, they don't want to wait and too long, and perhaps they're also conscious about, you know, how long they've already waited. What would you say to them?
I'd say, you know, if it's what you want to do and you know you want to be a mum, why wait? I just think, you know, what nowadays, you know, well, there are no rules anyway, are they? Let's face it. But I just mean, you know, you don't need to be with somebody to have a child and have a family. You know, families come in all shapes and sizes. You know, you have single parents, you have same-sex parents, you know, you have parents that separate and remarry. And, you know, I don't think nowadays, you know, there's not kind of, it's not frowned upon if you're not your normal average family of man, woman, married before you have any children. So if that's what you want to do, you know, go for it. I've had quite a few people that, since I've kind of shared what I've done and I've had Evelyn, that have messaged me and they've said, you know, thank you for sharing that. You know, it's something that I've been thinking about and I've always wondered, you know, whether I should or not. But now I kind of see your life and how you are with Evelyn and I'm going to go for it. So I think, you know, if it's what you want to do, you know, don't let anybody hold you back with anything really, you know, not just having a child. If it's what you want to do, then I'm very much a person that's, you know, kind of get stuck in and go for it if you're able to.
Yeah, just do it. Make your dreams come true. Make your dreams come true. And I think, yeah, I think definitely for some women, because it sounds like Rachel speaking to you, you're very confident. And, you know, I think for you, you were very adamant on what you wanted to do and you kind of went with it. I guess one thing that I would really like to kind of pick your brain on is, so one of the reasons why I wanted to start this episode was essentially because of the stigma, I guess, that's attached to being a single mom. But as you've just mentioned, there is a lot more room now for people to do what they want to do. And, you know, people's opinions isn't as, you know, it's not as appreciated or listened to as much as it was before. Do you think there is a difference in terms of women who, like me, you know, I had a baby, I didn't necessarily plan the baby, and I broke up with my son's dad, and now I'm a single mom, in comparison to your journey where you had decided that you wanted to be a single mom and went through the IVF journey?
I think in terms of kind of what other people think, when somebody sees or hears you're a single mom, I think a lot of people tar us with the same brush. So, you know, in the past, I was on one of the local radio stations kind of sharing what I'd done and my journey. And, you know, one of the first initial comments that came in was, oh, so she's on benefits then. And oh, it's wow. Like, so why are you presuming that because I'm a single mom, I'm on benefits? And it's like, no, I'm not on benefits. You know, not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, everybody's situation is different, but, you know, I don't claim anything. I'm not entitled to anything. I work. And that was literally one of the first comments. And, oh, who's paying for this child then? And it's just like, I am. She's my child.
Exactly. £9,000, you know, to have Evelyn, and that did not, you know, you didn't use a penny of the government's money. So it's, you know, it's terrible that people would even say that.
And then, you know, other comments that I've had in the past are like, oh, you know, you're a very selfish person to deprive her of a dad. And it's like, no, I'm not, you know, not, yes, you know, she's got all the male figures in her life. She's got uncles, she's got granddads. But, you know, some people have kids with a man and the men don't stick around, or, you know, some people lose their parents to death, or, you know, not everybody has got a dad. And I don't think that plays any part on how Evelyn's going to be brought up, or how she turns out. And, you know, there might be a point in the future, if I do meet somebody, that she's then going to have a father figure in her life anyway.
Yeah. And I think it's terrible because it completely misses the fact that the man gave away his sperm, you know.
Exactly.
He's also,
I just think, you know, those kind of comments are coming from men, and, you know, I'm not anti-men at all, but I think it was more of a fact that they perhaps didn't like the feeling of being inadequate, and the fact that actually you aren't needed in the way that you think for somebody to have a child and to have a family. You know, yes, I needed a man, I needed his sperm, but, you know, I didn't need a man in, you know, the old-fashioned way.
And I'm so glad you said that I'm not anti-man, because I think it is important to have these conversations without being anti-man. Because I think, really, being a son, I've always said to myself, I can't be anti-man, because at the end of the day, I'm teaching my son to hate himself. So I always, to some degree, have to have love for men, because I'm raising a man in my household. But at the same time, it is still really important to talk about some of these advantages that men do have in society, where they can give away their sperm, but then the woman is considered as selfish for having the child and not connecting with the sperm donor.
Yeah, if a man had a one-night stand and got somebody pregnant, you know, his friends, you know, some ages or some people would, you'd be like, you know, high five kind of thing. So it's just, you know, it's different stories and different circumstances. But, you know, as I just said, you know, I do still want to settle down. I do still want to meet somebody and, you know, potentially have more children. So it's nothing to do with being anti-men at all. It was just, you know, I'm going to put myself first for once and do what I want to do. And, you know, do things in a back to front order. I'm going to have a baby first, and then I'll sort out the rest later on in life.
And it's these types of stories that are changing the narrative. So thank you so much, Rachel, for sharing. Absolutely inspired. And I know there's going to be loads of women listening to this, perhaps women who have also gone through your journey, maybe women who have gone through my journey, that are just going to be looking up to you and feeling inspired just as much as I do right now.
Oh, thank you.
And that's it for today's show. If you'd like to share your story, email us hello@sassysinglemoms.com or get in touch on Instagram @sassy_singlemoms. You can also find us on all podcast platforms.